Ads, schmads. If you don't want ads, that's okay. Choose the Dave McWilliams Plus option on Apple Podcasts. And hey presto, no ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
Propaganda is not just about lies, it's about distraction. Just take a small sample of the cliches they use in order to divert the conversation. I'm sure you heard these one after the other. What is a proportionate response? Does Israel have the right to defend itself? Do you condemn Hamas? Does Israel have the right to exist? October 7th, decapitated babies, women were raped, babies were put in the oven, they are killing babies. October 7th, why don't the Arab take in the Palestinians? Where is the outrage when Muslims kill other Muslims? Why don't you talk about Syria, Libya, Sudan, Yemen? October 7th, you are anti-Semitic, you are a Jew hater, you are a terrorist sympathizer. Do you condemn Hamas? Hamas, October 7th. We will talk about everything except the killing that is happening every day as we sit here discussing bullshit talking points.
So that was Bassem Youssef. Now, people might know that Piers Morgan and Bassem Youssef had a conversation just after the invasion of Gaza, which has had 22 million downloads, right? Fascinating conversation.
Yeah. And who's he, though?
So he is an Egyptian cardiologist who became a comedian, had to leave Egypt because he was opposed to the Muslim Brotherhood,
right,
is now an American citizen, is a comedian, is a stand-up now. But because he's Egyptian, he has very, very strong views on the region because it's his part of the world.
Sure.
And I heard this clip on Twitter the other day, and I thought one of the great things about having the podcast, John, is you can just find these people in Twitter to want to come on.
Yeah, so we are going to have,
and it transpires, he is playing a gig on May the 2nd in the National Stadium, which is a venue that you like.
I do. I think it's a brilliant
venue. So he's playing a gig, his stand-up gig. But when I saw him talking about Israel, Palestine and Gaza, I thought, let's talk to him. And the beauty of modern technology, John, and communication is we are going to go to the Middle East now and talk to Bassem Youssef about the Palestinian-Israel conflict. So let's go to the Middle East. Bassem Youssef, how are you? Great to see you.
What an introduction, David. I don't know if I can top that. It's all downhill from me.
It's untoppable. Untoppable.
I was actually, when I was given the European routing and all of these cities, I called my agents like, I want to go to Dublin.
You have to.
And so I myself, like, we're going to try to do it. And then they added Dublin the 2nd of May. So I'm very, very excited.
No. In actual fact, it was on Twitter. I saw you're coming to Dublin. I said, okay, well, how do we get this geezer on the podcast?
And the geezer is here.
The geezer is here.
Happy days.
So, Bassem, let's go to it. You're looking. Where are you, actually? Dubai or
right
somewhere?
Right now I'm in Dubai.
Which is still open to Israelis. How explain that to me?
I don't know. And I don't care. And I kind of like, I don't want to get to meddle in other countries like policy about that. I focus about one thing about, I'm an American citizen and I care about like what my country right now, America, is actually doing to Israel. That's actually my problem. You know, because at the end of the day, I'm not an Emirati, I'm not a Saudi, and I don't vote in any of the elections. I don't vote in my own elections. And the thing is, when you kind of like, you know, become part of the United States, the leader of the free world. And then you find us like our politicians are being lackeys and poodles of the Israeli government. It's just like, what? I came all the way for this.
Exactly. I was sold a bomb, you know. Well, you know, yeah. But actually, let's just look. Let's focus this. Okay, so there are many, many people who will have been aware of you, who've been aware of your comedy, people in the comedy circuit. Then suddenly you talk to Piers Morgan. Most people talk to Piers Morgan's The Kiss of Death. For you, it's this extraordinary lifeline in the sense that you come to a huge audience, okay, a different audience. And you're talking about Gaza, and we want to talk about Gaza. You'll probably know Ireland is possibly the most pro-Palestinian country in Europe. We are very, very exercised, animated. It's not just sympathy, it's anger, it's frustration, it's all that. We're also very close to America. So we've got this bizarre sort of duopoly going on in our heads. Explain to me why you think, just on this point you just made, that the American government and the American establishment is doubling down on Israel. Why?
Well, there's, of course, the usual answer about like the bias and what they think, but there is actually a much more honest and troubling answer. I mean, of course, there's the money part, which is like AIPAC now is like actively funding a lot of politicians. So basically, those people are not loyal to their voters. They're loyal for the paycheck. But that does not explain the bigger picture. The bigger picture is that, unfortunately, a lot of politicians are Christian Zionists. And they have been driven by a religious ideology, a very dangerous religious ideology where they said that supporting Israel is like part of a dispensationist ideology. And it's even, it is troubling because, you know, when you talk about the Judeo-Christian values, nothing in the founding fathers' documents talk about Judeo-Christian. This is very relatively new, only 19th century. And the thing is, we are led to believe that they are at the same and they have the same, but they have totally different goals because the Christian Zionists believe that supporting Israel will bring in Armageddon and the second coming of Jesus. And after that, all of the Jews will either be killed or convert to Christianity. While the end of time Armageddon and the red heifers and the ideology from the Jewish side is about that they are waiting for the Messiah because Jesus is a fake prophet. And when the Messiah comes, everybody will be enslaved by the Jews. So it's very funny, like how people are they thinking exactly. They're wanting the same thing with totally different.
It's a kind
result.
Of it's a kind of an all or nothing bet.
But you see the hypocrisy, because since the day I was born, I heard the West lecturing the Arab and Muslim countries about how dangerous it is to involve religion in politics. Oh, your religion is ridiculous. Your religion is violent. Your religion wants the destruction of humanity. And now they are actually openly rallying for the destruction of humanity through a religious ideology. Lauren Boebert, who's like a very famous right-wing congresswoman, she was asked about like, what do you think about the support of America. It's like, I believe there are two countries in the world that were created with the sole purpose of glorifying God, and these guys are like the United States of America and Israel. It's like, what? What is this? What is this? You know? And this whole idea about like pushing for the end of times. It's very dangerous. You're basically pushing for the end of the world for a prophecy. And that even prophecy was not even in the Bible. I don't know if you know the background. There's something called the Scofield Bible, which was written by a lawyer who was a convicted felon in the 1800s. And this was published by Oxford University Press. And you know what's so funny? This Bible was edited many times. And after 1967, it was edited in a way that to show that what happened is part of a prophecy.
This is like a Bible with Google Docs. You know, everybody can come in and say,
They're editing it like the same way they edit Wikipedia, it's just crazy. And can you imagine the whole world is like waiting on those like bonkers and stupid people and crazy people to get the end of the world?
Well, Basim, there are enough rational people in America who have seen the last 6 months and say, hold on a second. Yesterday, we were in the Security Council on our own. We are on our own in the UN. We are isolated. We have given Putin, by supporting the Israelis, we've given Putin a lifeline. We have obscured the war in Ukraine. Our double standards has forced the street in Europe out every Sunday, every Saturday, hundreds, thousands, millions of people. We're driving a wedge between ourselves and the European, all for some Armageddonist fantasy. surely in the United States, there are people saying, hold on a second, guys. We didn't get to be the superpower world leader, yada, yada, by going down the road of Armageddon. We got by being rational, by being logical, and by being powerful, but in the right way. So what gives?
I mean, here's the thing. The rational people that you're talking about are either they've been intimidated by being called anti-Semitic, or if they're Jewish people, they're being called self-hating Jews. And this is a way to shut down conversation. And you remember when the accusation anti-Semite used to freeze people, like blood people's veins? Remember? Oh my God, no, I'm not this anti-Semite. No, it doesn't make anything because they have overused it and they have used it. It doesn't mean anything anymore. They're using it against Jewish people themselves. And there's a story, there's a very famous story that's done from 1950s. Stefan Hessel is a French Jew who fought with the French resistance against the Nazis. And he was in Auschwitz. You don't get more Jewish than this, right? And not only that, he was one of the co-authors of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And 3 years ago in Paris, his events were canceled because he stood for BDS and the Palestinian rights, and he was called an anti-Semite. Now, when you hear that, does it mean anything anymore? It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't. And the thing is, like, people need to understand, like, you cannot call me anti-Semite. I'm a Semite myself. I'm an Arab. And also, what does it mean to be an anti-Semite? What kind of a privilege should I get, or what kind of like a special treatment if I am born from a certain race? What does it mean? Why should that make me above reproach or above criticism? Like, I'm an American and I can say F Trump, F Biden, but I cannot say that to Israel. It is stupid and it is ridiculous and it doesn't make any sense.
Basim, explain to me, as an Egyptian and as an Arab, why have the Arabs been the Arab countries around? Like, I mean, why are Israelis still going, let's say, to Dubai? Why have the Arabs been so quiet on this?
I can't explain it. And it really boggles my mind. I don't understand. I don't get it.
And tell me, what do you think the logic of the Israeli position is now? Explain that to me from your perception, not sort of American, but as an Egyptian, as somebody with relations in Gaza, with somebody who knows the world, who's been living this all your life.
Well, I don't know if I can explain the thing, but like, it's obvious how they speak about themselves. We are God-chosen people. They have two things going for them, the Holocaust and God-chosen people. Because they're God-chosen people, they can do whatever they want because they're chosen. And because of Holocaust, they can do whatever they want because of the victimization of happened of other people, Jewish people, who, by the way, many of the Holocaust survivors and their descendants do not approve of Israeli actions. So they have the victimhood and they have the supremacy. When these two, this is a lethal combination. Like, I'm a victimized supremacist. It doesn't make any sense. So when they have this, that's why the way that they speak about Palestinians, the way that they treat the Palestinians, the way they kill the Palestinians, they're killing them like animals because they really believe that they are the chosen ones and they believe that those people are lesser humans. And if you remember during the Holocaust, the Nazis called Jewish people rats. And it's okay to kill a rat, but it's not never okay to kill a human. But if in their mind they are rats, of course we can kill a million of them, right?
I remember I interviewed many years ago Edward Said, probably one of the great intellectuals to come out of Palestine, certainly in the last 50 years. And he did explain something to me. He said, you know, David, if you want to understand Palestinian people, this is before Hamas. This is a long, long time ago. He said, we are the victims of victims and they are traumatized and we are traumatized.
I disagree with that.
Okay.
Because the people who are doing the perpetration have never been victimized. None of those people are like victims of Holocaust. I think the Palestinians are victims of people who are using the pain of other victims in order to advance their agenda. Because someone who went through this will never inflict that kind of pain on any other people.
Yes, I think that's a fair point. But do you believe, is there a generational echo of trauma, do you think? And if there is, then the Palestinians are going to be pretty much traumatized for many generations.
Absolutely. Like, of course there is. But the thing is, like, by the way, 70% of the Jewish people in Israel are actually from the Arab countries. They never went through Holocaust. And from Iraq and from Algeria and from Morocco. And many of them are actually descendants of Ashkenazi Jews. And who themselves right now, even especially in a position of power, they never went to the Holocaust themselves. But the thing is, like, talking about trauma. What do you think the kind of trauma that those people in Gaza and the West Bank, by the way, goes through? And what kind of people and human beings have you actually made them? You know, a lot of people say, like, what happened? The atrocities of Hamas. Okay, right, true. There are atrocities. But if you continue treating people like animals, what do you expect?
No, I mean, we've seen this playbook in a very, very minor way in Ireland. many years ago, in the last 50 years. So you get one part of the population is downtrodden, is not nowhere close to. I mean, I've always remember, I was telling John here years ago, getting a bus from Damascus Gate to, I think it was to Bethlehem. It must have been Damascus Gate. And the way in which, the different way in which the people were treated on the Israeli side and the Palestinian side by the Israeli cops, this is a long time ago, was extraordinary. So you're absolutely right. Where do you think the Palestinians go after this? Because there will be a ceasefire. There has to be a ceasefire. All these wars end in a ceasefire.
I don't know, like the 32,000 people killed, 100,000 plus people injured. I don't know their families, their remnants, their survivors. I don't know how they'll think. They believe that if they kill all of those people, they're going to be okay under the Israeli occupation. They're going to love Israel now. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, they have been very vocal about what they want to do with them. They want to push them into Sinai.
Yeah.
And if they do that, after they will find Hamas in the West Bank and they're going to push them into Jordan, right? And then maybe they were going to push people Jordan into Saudi Arabia. And they have been very vocal about it, very, very open about it. And they don't mince word about it. But you see, this is the whole idea about like making people feel guilty about showing who they are. Like, I guess last year, correct me if I'm wrong, the Irish female soccer team qualified for the Euros after beating Scotland. And there were, like, videos from their locker room singing Irish rebellion songs.
Ooh, right? Up the Ra.
Up to Ra?
Up the Ra, which means up the IRA. The Ra is the shortened IRA.
Up the IRA. That's,
yeah, this can be your opener in your Dublin, when you just come out of the stage.
Up the Ra. And Sky News went after these little girls. It's like, why don't you apologize for this? And the thing is, and Cillian Murphy, when he won the SAG Award, he said, like, I think I'm going to sing Irish rebel songs right now, you know? And people go up in arms. And the thing is, like, they don't even want to explain yourself. Everything is about them. You cannot, whatever you do, offends me. And they forget what they did to the Irish.
Oh, no, we don't forget.
Yes, but they do. And they said, like, how dare you express yourself? How dare you complain about me killing you?
but you know, what you've been very strong on, Basim, is this particular issue, is the framing of the discussion. Who gets to frame the discussion? Who gets to lead the discussion? And who gets to set the parameters of the discussion? And I've watched you online. You've been extremely adroit at this particular issue. Explain that to the listeners, your perception of the way in which propaganda works, the way in which the message is managed, the way in which the managing of the message in itself is almost now as important as the message.
Yes, because like I talked about that in many things about like the distractions. Like, for example, they want to take you inside discussions that doesn't, like, the, for example, like, oh, what's the proportionate response? Is it a genocide or not? Who cares? But this is like a way to kind of like they're stalling to buy time to kill more people, for Israel to do whatever they want. I mean, they get us into useless questions like, does Israel have the right to defend itself? Does Israel have the right to exist? What do you condemn Hamas? What happened about the decapitated babies, which, by the way, lies, the gang rape, which is again lies. But it's like it's just like they want to distract you and exhaust you into endless discussions while Israel is having all the time to continue doing what it's doing. The only discussion that we should be having is like how to stop the killing today. That's the only thing. Other like what will happen tomorrow? What is it, a one state or a two state solution? That doesn't matter to me now. What matters to me is stop what's happening, but that the daily murder is happening and the whole world is just like either watching or choose not to watch.
What about the Israelis say, look, okay, I know the Israelis, some of the Americans say, okay, look, very simple solution here is Hamas, surrender. You got you surrounded, you're an army, surrender, game over.
Okay, let's surrender. So before Hamas started, came into the world in 1988 and they took Gaza in 2006. Did the killing stop before that?
No.
Did the killing and the daily genocide and the daily confiscation of homes and land, did it start with Hamas? Or did it start way before that? So it just, like, it's again, it's one of those useful discussions.
Okay, well, let's look broader, right? There's, let's say, 12 million people in Palestine, Israel, maybe 13. You've got about 7 million Arabs, Muslims, and Christians, and 7 million Jews. Neither side are going anywhere long term. Where do you think it all goes?
Well, again, I don't know, because like you see, you cannot just come to a comedian after 75% of complicated...
A cardiologist comedian, which I want to talk about again, because John and I are worried about our hearts at this stage of our lives, right?
But the thing is, they have created that mess for 75 years. And you cannot come to me as like, oh, what do you think about solution? I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know. You are the one who put yourself into that shit. You're the one who created that dilemma. You're the one who, by the way, there are 7 million other Palestinians who cannot go back home. There are refugees everywhere in the world. Nobody seems to talk about them. You have created through injustice and brutality and extreme hatred and extreme force. You created that situation. You don't come to me for solutions. You created that mess. You fix it.
Do you think the West would be less hated in the Arab world than it is, actually? Because I'm always intrigued by this. So the question isn't you hate the West. I would have thought, why don't you hate them even more?
Listen, we don't hate the West. We all immigrate to the West. We like living in the West. We hate the Western policies. There's a huge difference, right? But you cannot just continue standing on the right wrong side of history. You cannot really continue to stay with the murderers and the killers and expect to be loved.
So I've heard your view, and I've heard a lot of Palestinian views. Can you understand the Israeli point of view at all?
Which point of view? Because there are many.
Okay. The point of view that they would say, look, hold on a second. We put all these, 1948, Israel was a big refugee camp for Jewish Holocaust survivors in the main. Yes, we displaced people. There was a variety of wars. Who started them? They started them. You started them. We started them, whatever. We get to this situation where we have our state, which is mandated by and given to us by the United Nations, right? And let us live in that state, and then we will revisit the 68 borders and all that sort of stuff. Do you think there's any legitimacy, even from that peacenik Israeli view?
Well, I think practically it's going to be very difficult to just like erase a whole country and let people outside. But I never called for that. But at the same time, you can also have to understand the Palestinian point of view. Like the people we were sitting here, this was a Holocaust that was happening other places in the world. Those people were being pushed from other places because America and England and Europe didn't accept them. So they came to us. I mean, I don't know, like, you know, Anna Frank, the poster child of the Holocaust, her father, Otto Frank, was denied a visa to go to the United States. So now you have to understand that the Palestinians are paying for the European sin, and they came in, took their land, and the first it was like, I don't know, 47, 30, 40, 53. It was one third of the population were Jewish, ending up taking 55% of the land, which is unfair. So now they fought and they lost. And that is like, well, you didn't get it, so you should get less. It's like if a million Ukrainians came into Ireland, it's like, all right, we're going to take 20%. It's like, no, we're not getting it for you. And then Ukraine goes in and wins and take 70%. And now it's like, okay, we can agree for 50%. No, you lost your chance. We cannot give it to you. Is this how the world works? You understand? This is like an original sin that was not committed by the Arabs, committed by Europeans. And now the Arabs have to give land and people and blood for that. And even when at a certain point where the Palestinian authorities were willing to accept less, even that less was not given to them.
And again, this, let's come back to the propaganda thing. This is all framed in, you know, the Arabs had their chance and they didn't do it and we gave them this chance and whatever. I mean...
No. This is another propaganda thing because every time Yasser Arafat was giving a shitty deal and even in the Oslo Accord 2000, they said, okay, I need time to go in and have to consult with the Arab capitals because the deal was very bad, all right? And then what happened, there was election happened in Israel and Ariel Sharon won and Ehud Barak that was... in the negotiation was not there anymore. And then Eric Sharon came in and then did sabotage. And you have Netanyahu on tape saying that he was proud of sabotaging the Oslo Accord. So you cannot just like have all of these in front of you and then talk about the Palestinians. You talk about Hamas, 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 Hamas. And you have Netanyahu bragging in 2019 in a Likud party meeting that he financed Hamas. He allowed money to flow into Hamas. And he said in order to prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state, we need to bolster and strengthen Hamas. So you have all of this on tape and they want to ignore all of that and talk about the Palestinians.
Let's look at the rest of these Arab world, right? Your own country, Egypt, you left and or were advised to leave or left quite quickly. Egypt, explain to me what the future of you think of the, of big Arab countries like Egypt is. You're talking about the cradle before the cradle of civilization. We're talking about an enormous legacy of all sorts of pre-European civilizations, giving the Europeans geometry, giving the Europeans all sorts of stuff. What is the future of a big country like Egypt right now?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, you know, you have sometimes history doesn't dictate the future. You have Greece, who was like kind of like the beacon of enlightenment and science. And then like a few years ago, they were piggybacking on all of the European Union, taking money of them. And they were doing very bad financially and politically. So unfortunately, sometimes like a great past does not really guarantee a bright future. I mean, I think I've been very vocal about in Egypt about like my situation about freedom of expression and how the fact that like when you limit freedom of expression or limit freedom, it is not an economical problem. It's a political problem. Because if you don't have accountability and transparency in policies, you don't have accountability and transparency in economics. And eventually things will go south. And it is going south. So, and I think it's like I left Egypt and I said I went to America in order to come to this great land that promises all kinds of promises. And I find that like my politicians are corrupted and they're bought by a client state, a small like state in the Middle East that we sponsor with our tax money. And it's kind of like they're being lackeys and poodles for this country, which is very, very disheartening.
Let's go back to Gaza. You have family in Gaza. The Israelis are now completely isolated in the world, apart from the United States. Do you think there's a possibility that the Israelis will get what they want and the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians into Sinai might happen?
Unfortunately, they have been getting what they want for the past 70 years. And I'm really worried that that will happen, because if that happened, that would be disastrous for every. That actually would be disastrous to Israel more than anybody else.
Explain
that. Because now we're going to push them into Sinai, and they're going to be like in a bigger land. They're going to have like open borders into like the Sinai desert. They're going to have like access to the sea. And now it's going to be the Egyptian problem. And now what happens if they don't secure the borders and the sea? They're going to have more weapons. And you think what those people like sitting in the Sinai will do? They're going to sit there quietly, happy, lounging in the sun? Or they're going to want to go back to their land and they're going to start to actually like attack Israel again from outside, being even more stronger. So it's just like, I don't know even how that makes sense.
And tell me about the West Bank. So what we see in the West Bank, I mean, you've always made the point, look, if you want to imagine a world with no Hamas, just look at the West Bank, right?
It doesn't matter, because they will find Hamas. They will create a Hamas. Because the West Bank has been under like a continuous, like 2023 with the deadliest year in the West Bank against children, right? This whole thing about like October 7th, every day in Palestinians' life is October 7th. They go in and they kidnap people. They kidnap people. Those are hostages. The fact that they are in Israeli prisoners doesn't make them prisoners. It makes them hostages. Because you go in unlawfully and you kidnap children and you kidnap women and you put them in the prisons and you sexually assault them and you torture them. But nobody seems to be speaking about that. So this is like a violation of every human sentiment and even human value that we have been taught that the West carries. And then Israel gets away with it. So I really need to ask the Europeans and Americans, why are you so silent? Except the Irish, because you're not.
Oh, well, this is the Irish exceptionalism. Tell me, how does a cardiologist transition to be a comedian, to now being an activist? Explain this, because
I'm not an activist.
So how does a fella who's trained to fix hearts end up on the comedy circuit in California?
I ask this question every day. I ask myself every day.
No, go on, tell us.
It was really like, I did like a YouTube video that went viral. Suddenly I have my own show. And then I went into television and comedy not knowing anything about it. And then I think I faked it till I made it. And then I had to kick out from my, and then I got kicked out from my country, went to America. Now I started doing stand-up comedy with my second language, which again was very scary. And I was very afraid to fail every single day and still fail today. Afraid today that like I might not do it. So I think if I would, in 2011, you would tell me like, you know, imagine your future 10 years ahead. I would have never imagined this. I think I just like went through the motions and accepted it as it came.
Would you ever do an anti-BDS thing and play in Tel Aviv?
That would be funny.
No, but really, I mean, the point is if you think, right, that, you know, comedians, artists, writers, poets can actually be not so much peacemakers, but if you go back to the old days, you know, the jester in the court could say things that the court could never say. And he told the king the things that the king's advisors could never do. You know, would you go, if invited, to Tel Aviv to do a gig?
I was actually invited to the West Bank and I didn't go, because going to the West Bank means that I have to go through Israeli security and I don't want to go through this experience.
I'll tell you, I was been through Israeli security in a few times, but I will tell you, one of the greatest ones was the biggest non-Jewish ever tourist event in Israel was the Republic of Ireland soccer team. 4,000 Irish people went to Tel Aviv to watch our soccer team. We're probably the most loved, but maybe the least talented football team in Europe. And it was kind of chaos at the Israeli security. And they were on their best behavior, but even on their best behavior, it was pretty appalling. And I think I've watched Palestinians, I've seen Arabs at Israeli checkpoints, and it's deeply, deeply unpleasant. And let's end on this issue, right? Is there any world that you can envisage where there is peace in that region between those 7 million on one side and 7 million on the other?
Here's the problem. Peace is not something very difficult to attain. What is very difficult to attain is justice. And justice is always being sabotaged by human greed. I'm not just going to get my land. I'm going to get your land. I'm going to get my cows. I'm going to get your cows. This has been, unfortunately, the driving force of humanity all through history, wars and greed. And now if you add to that religious extremism and the fact that you give up on humanity and the earth and you just want Armageddon to come and so you would be united with Jesus Christ or the Messiah and destroy the whole world, that's a lethal combination. So I have hope in humanity, but I don't have hope in the people who lead that work.
It's been an absolute pleasure, an absolute pleasure. We're only scratching the surface. And we will see you in Dublin in a couple of weeks' time.
Thank you so much. And David, I can't wait to see you in Dublin.
Great stuff.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's a lot of stuff there that Basim is talking about, which is very interesting. And, you know, it's hard not to agree with his perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just on that, on his point about, you know, moving the Gazans into Sinai.
All
the rest. I have to read you this quote, or these couple of quotes, that the award for the biggest knob must go to Jared Kushner, because he said this in an interview, I think it was last week or the week before last. Here's one line, he says, Gaza's waterfront property could be very valuable if people would focus on building up livelihoods. Then he went on to say, it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there, but from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up.
Well, I mean, it's very clear, John, that Jared Kushner represents the real estate approach to peace in the Middle East, right? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to think that that guy was Trump's peace ambassador, and what he's talking about now are waterfront prime real estate on the Mediterranean.
What a view of the Palestinian people and the whole situation.
Well, let's conclude this podcast by drawing out a little bit and trying to get some sort of altitude on the situation and some sort of geostrategic view. So what is very, very clear that the Israelis may well win the battle, right? But they're losing the war with Hamas.
Yeah.
And by that I mean they are running out of options, and they know it. And the reason I know they're running out of options is they are trying to lure Hezbollah and Iran into a wider war. And you know when the Israelis are trying to lure Iran into a wider war, that they've lost their own regional battle. And I'll explain that in a second. Yeah. In fact, this might actually need another podcast on it, John, because, you know, but let's just look at it. Right. So Israel now has four options. As we said, there are 14 million people in the disputed area of Palestine, of Israel-Palestine. About 7 million Israelis and about 7 million Palestinians. So some accommodation is going to happen. So the Israelis have four options. And the reason I'm focusing on the Israelis is only strong make the peace.
Yeah.
The weak can never make the peace. Only the strong can make the peace. And Israel is by far and away the dominant partner here, but the isolated partner. And that's the interesting thing. So the first thing is they can go back to the Oslo Accord two-state solution that they rubbished. Now, you will remember in our last podcast we did on Israel-Palestine, we said that in the last 10 years, there has been a sort of a truce where the Israelis tried to build Silicon Valley in Haifa. They had this reservation called the West Bank and Gaza. They thought they could seal it off and nobody would think about it. And as long as nothing was happening, the Israelis could pretend it wasn't there.
Yeah.
So that's now gone.
Yep.
That view is gone. So we have to start again. Two-state solution, as problematic, as dissatisfying as it is on the table, right? Number one. Second solution is the one-state solution, John, which is that the Israelis open up citizenship and passports to all Palestinians, to the West Bank. They annex the West Bank and they say, but you're now citizens of Israel, like what they call the Israeli Arabs. Would and they do the same thing for
Gaza. Palestinians be up for that?
I'm just saying, just think of the options.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
Because there are 2 million Palestinians living in Israel, right? They do exist, right?
Yeah,
there's a big Arabic population there, right? So imagine the Israelis did that. So, okay, that's it. We're all citizens, right? So we end the occupation by giving you citizenship and we're all in this one big Arab-Israeli soup called this new country.
Right, yeah.
But the problem for the Israelis then is that totally diminishes the Jewish nature of Israel. So if Israel was set up as a Jewish homeland, it can't be a Jewish homeland if 50% of the people are non-Jewish. That's the first thing. The second thing is the Israelis don't trust the Palestinians and vice versa. The third option...
You'd have, at the moment, you have these coalition governments that are hung parliaments all the time. So it'd be even worse.
But again, that's probably even better than occupation. But anyway, so that's the first. Two-state solution, then one-state solution, right? Then, of course, there is permanent occupation, that the Israelis double down on their policy at the moment and they occupy and they harass and they harangue the West Bank Palestinians and the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
This means that Israel becomes an international pariah. I would say it leads to them being sanctioned, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they will lose support of the United States because the United States is a rational country.
That's going quickly at the moment, yeah.
Exactly. And the reason the Israelis are trying to lure the Iranians in at the moment, John, I'll go back to it, is the American support is fragile, or more fragile.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the Israelis know if they can have a wider war with Iranians in on the other side, the Americans will all coalesce around the Israelis.
So incredibly cynical.
It is very cynical. But it's equally cynical on the Arab side. The Arab side are saying, well, let's let the Israelis hang themselves. So the
true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, true.
Because
like,
you're looking at the Egyptians. The Egyptians aren't helping the Palestinians.
Mm.
But what their long game is, and the Arab long game, is isolation of Israel. And then, of course, you have this fourth option, which is the really right-wing Israeli option, which is the ethnic cleansing of all Palestinians from Gaza, the one that they are doing now.
They're in the middle of that. They call it the
Nakba Part 2. So in 1948, we got rid of 700,000 of them. Now we're going to get rid of another 2 million. And we're going to do the same in the West Bank. And we're going to do it under this biblical umbrella. Now that is the option that I think the Israeli cabinet now wants, which is fourth one. But the world won't let them.
Mm.
So they're kind of stuck. They're hemmed in. And of course, now they have to go back to see what the Arabs allow. And I've always thought the one interesting way of looking at the Arab world is through what I would call the souk versus the citadel. So you've been in Marrakesh, haven't you?
Yes.
Right, so you know the souk in Marrakesh, right? The souk is the market, and that's where everyone gossips and talks, and that's where public opinion is formed,
in the
souk. And then beside the souk, you have the citadel. And the citadel is where the princes live and where the power is. Right?
Yeah.
So imagine these two power bases, the souk, where public opinion is formed, and the citadel, where the princes or the elite's opinion is formed.
Mm.
And because the Arab democracies function different to us, and the regimes function differently, it's always an interchange, an interplay between the souk and the citadel.
Yeah, yeah.
And about 5 years
it's
ago,
a push and pull.
Push and pull all the time. So about 5 years ago, the Israeli plan of let's forget about the Palestinians, let's keep them quiet, let's do a deal with the Saudis, let's do a deal with Dubai, let's do a deal. They were basically appealing to the citadel because the Arab souk was quiet and peaceful because there was no massive, massive rebellion in the West Bank.
Yeah.
Now what Hamas has ensured is that the Arab souk is in power, not the citadel.
Yeah.
And the citadel cannot make peace with Israel because the souk won't allow it. So it's this over and back, over
okay,
and back. So now we're looking at the souk being in power. So public opinion is in the market, it's in the cafes, it's on the street, and it's saying, no, you cannot make peace with Israel because the Israelis are killing our brothers in Gaza. That is forcing the Israelis to try and open up the war with the Iranians, which is why they killed that Iranian military leader in Syria a couple of days ago, not because he's a threat, which is the spin they're putting on it. So if you read all the media now, The Economist, New York Times, The Financial Times are saying, Israel moving against Iranians to suppress a threat. No, it's Israel trying to lure the Iranians into a full-scale war via Hezbollah in South Lebanon, and that internationalizes, and suddenly people forget about Gaza. It distracts, it's gone, it's back to what Basim was saying, distraction, distraction, change the angle of attack. And that's what they want to do. But ultimately, John, right now, what I see is that you can't see it because Israel is deflecting and is dominant and is doing the killing. But Israel is weakening day by day by day. They're in a cul-de-sac, John. They're losing. They have these four options on the table. Total occupation, ethnic cleansing, one-state solution, or two-state solution. And you know what? They're going to be back to the two-state solution eventually.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.